Hello, beautiful people. Welcome back to Gaberhood. It has been a 10-month hiatus because creating a book, moving cities, and keeping work going all at the same time was more than I could handle. But I still very much believe in the beautiful mission of this podcast to share us and each other with ourselves, to just create community and enjoy our gay lives that much more. Thank you very much for listening. Some notes from episode 11 onwards, I'm going to be doing less editing. There's going to be more ums, more ahs, more talking over each other. So I apologize. It's not delightful, but this is the most sustainable and effective way for me to make this product and make the dream happen in all the different directions. So thanks for understanding. Today, we're going to be meeting Jesse. He is a lovely, lovely dude. I hope you absolutely love it and enjoy episode 11 and tell your friends and share it with everybody if you love it. As always, you can contact me at edward@gaberhoodpodcast. Hit us up on Gaberhood Podcast on Instagram. I'm also available at Brown Bear Coaching and at A Gay Man Book on Instagram. These are my favorite things to do. I hope you love them. That's it. I'm going to leave that in. Have a lovely, lovely listen. Bye for now. Welcome to Gaberhood, the podcast bringing us closer to each other and ourselves, one gay at a time. Today, we are meeting a certain special someone, Jesse Hawkins from Jesse Hawkins Coaching. We met through Instagram. Howdy, neighbor. Welcome to Gaberhood.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Yay.
Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Let's start with introductions. Jesse, some have claimed that you are the man that has lived 100 lifetimes already. We were just chatting about this, and you have many interesting things. What are the basics about you that you'd like to people to know first?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, right now I'm a gay relationship coach. So I help gay men find the partner of their dreams is my tagline. But I... You know, people say that I've lived 100 lifetimes because I used to work in the veterinary industry. I used to be in a folk band as a musician. I was a barista at one point. Like I used to work in the church as a youth pastor, like tons and tons of different areas and jobs.
Aquarium and so, aquascaping.
Yes.
I just wanted to say it.
Yep. And then I haven't worked in aquascaping, but that's a big hobby of mine, as well as a ton of different other creative, weird, unique hobbies.
Awesome. That's super cute. And when you joined our little online meeting today, you're wearing your Ash Ketchum Pokemon hat and you have a delightful doggy with you as well.
Exactly. Yep. I have a little corgi and I'm a big nerd as well. So huge into Pokemon and Zelda and all those, you know, nerdy Nintendo things.
Why are so many of us gays so nerdy?
Oh my gosh. It's probably just because that's where we could retreat to when we were kids. Because it's like, you know, normal kids, they could retreat into sports or like friend groups or something like that. But for us, it's like, I don't know, maybe our queerness makes us more creative, more unique, more out of the box. And that's what we saw in video games and comic books and, you know, nerdy stuff like that. So we were able to relate to it more.
Definitely. That makes sense to me. And then it becomes like this safe space. And then as adults, because we're like, we've already come out and been gay and broken all the standard kind of rules. So it's like, well, I like my safe space. I like my Pokemon. I like my nerdiness. I like Baldur's Gate 3 or whatever. We're just less inhibited in terms of perhaps sharing our uniqueness.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and I think with like nerdiness in general, it's kind of become more of a acceptable, cool thing in the last, you know, 15 years or so.
Yeah. Down with sports. Although I do love esports. So not down with all sports. Nah, not down with any sports.
Just video game sports is good. Yeah.
I went to a footy themed night at my local gay bar recently, and you got to look around, and I chatted to some of the guys that were in the full outfits, and about half of them were like, yeah, I just get this as a costume to take it to parties occasionally. And about half of them were like, no, I watch every week. Like, I love this team. So shout out to you, sporty gays. I see you.
Yeah.
Jesse, can I ask how old you are, where you live, like the intense basics, the real basics?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm 34. I live in Anaheim, California, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I've lived here since 2008. I moved here for college and grew up in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I guess the only other basics that would be possible are like white man, cisgender gay man. Are both of those true?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Cool.
White, cisgender. Yeah, I'm in a partnership. I've been with my partner for 2 years, and
yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. That sounds like all the basics. I think we've covered it, and then all the advanced things: cool. Folk band, veterinary. So you worked in vet. How many years were you a vet for?
So I worked in the veterinary industry for about 7 years. I started off as a receptionist, then moved to become a veterinary assistant. And then worked my way up to become a practice manager. So I was, you know, a manager of an entire hospital.
Okay. So you didn't go down the like surgerizing dogs route. You did the management and running of veterinary hospitals.
Correct. Yeah. As a veterinary assistant, I did a lot of the medical side. So I learned how to monitor surgery, do like perform dental cleanings, you know,
mostly basic on dogs, like dogs and cats.
Bandaging and stuff. Yeah, only on dogs and cats. Yeah, I've done a couple things on like ferrets, but that's it.
Okay, cool. Because it sounds really cute, but is it really cute, or do you get a lot of dogs and cats with bad breath and bad teeth?
Cats, not so much. Dogs, yes. You know, especially like dental health with dogs, it's a fairly new concept, you know, 10, 20 years. Mm. And so people are still getting the hang of like, oh, your dog's teeth needs to be brushed too. And like your dog needs to get dental cleanings every year and stuff like that.
Yeah. I've seen people putting the little silicone things on their fingers and rubbing the dog's teeth with the solution. Is that it? Just all the dog owners out there that might not currently be brushing their dog's teeth?
Yeah. You start with that little finger brush and you work your way up to like a actual toothbrush.
Oh, wow.
And then once a day. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a lot of work, but if you love your pets, and I'm sure, I hope we all do. Yeah. Cool. Let's do it. Let's brush your dog's teeth. It could be a fun bonding experience.
Exactly.
Does the toothpaste taste like liver, or initially at least, to like help them acclimatize to doing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, cool. They have different flavors like chicken or liver or whatever. And they're all edible, so you don't have to worry about like spit, you know, Fido spit.
Of course. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Oh, we were chatting very briefly. You know, we got a lot to cover today. We'll try and keep it concise. But I personally found it very interesting that I'm aware that the veterinary industry can have a severe mental health toll on people. It's one of the industries mm-hmm. that has the highest kind of suicide rate for professionals, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Could you briefly touch on that and just give us your thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, the veterinary industry. Sorry, I laughed. My dog's barking in the background.
Yeah.
The veterinary industry is. Can you hear him? By the way.
Yeah. Which is fine. But does it him? Does he need attention, or is he all right? Just barking.
No, he should be fine in a second.
Oh, cool. It's fine.
Okay, cool. The veterinary industry, it historically has had a higher suicide rate because a lot of the times veterinarians experience something called compassion fatigue. And most of the time it's actually from compliance from the owners. It's not actually the job itself. Mm. It's talking to owners, making the recommendations that are needed, and then owners going, yeah, I don't have enough money, and just declining all services, or arguing about services. Mm. And so it's just that every, you know, half of the time when you're talking to clients, especially in, you know, the demographic that you have at the hospital or the area that you live in, it might be like every other conversation that you have is just a financial debate where the veterinarian is going, you really need to do this for your pet. And them going, yeah, I don't have enough money. And honestly, I don't care about my pet enough.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, they make the recommendations, the owners do it, but then, and like buy the medications, whatever. But then they don't follow directions appropriately. Mm. And so then the pet ends up getting worse or suffering and coming back later. Mm. You know, an example that I have of that is this one dog came in and got neutered at my hospital. And we told the owners, you have to put on the e-collar, you know, the cone of shame.
Yep.
And you have to leave it on consistently for, you know, 7 days, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the owners didn't listen, immediately took it off. The dog ended up licking the incision site. Mm. It got infected. Mm. It swelled up to probably, you know, probably like a grapefruit size. This was an English bulldog. And they came back like a week later, and we had to go back into surgery and basically clean all of that out.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah. So it was just a hot mess. But
yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, that's what happens often. Mm. And so, you know, these veterinarians who have such a heart and have such a passion for pets and really helping people with, like, via their pets too.
Yep. When it falls down, despite your best efforts repeatedly, it grinds on you. Yeah. And then your compassion and your heart goes out to these situations enough that you're like, ooh, I'm really hurting now, you know? And then you begin to suffer yourself.
Yeah, exactly. But there's been a lot of advancements with, mental health in the veterinary industry in the past, like 10 years or so. You know, there's different suicide hotlines specifically for veterinarians. There's especially the bigger veterinary companies, they provide a lot of mental health resources, mandatory mental health days, like things like that. And just general support and knowledge to kind of help the rest of the team recognize when one of the doctors is suffering, the different signs to look for.
Yes.
So that way you can go to them and be like, hey, I think you need to take a break, or how can I help you more, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's hard to open these conversations and get into them appropriately, isn't it? Because of course the vet probably wants to say, I'm a professional, I'm also a strong person. Like, no, exactly. I'm suffering a little bit, of course, but it's not a big deal. So that maybe part of the education is see the signs and walk up and say, hey, I already think you are a courageous, powerful, effective person. Part of keeping you as healthy as possible to help as many people as possible may be that right now you can't kind of, is it your turn to take a break? Is it your turn to get some refreshment? How can we take care of you so that you can take care of other people? And try and twist it so that it feels a lot more loving, compassionate, camaraderie. We're all in this together, but like in an authentic, wholesome way, not a...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And a lot of veterinarians too, they do feel that pressure that they are the leaders of the hospital. They're leading this team of assistants and whatnot. Mm. And so they feel like, I can't be struggling because I need to be the leader for the team. You know, and honestly, a lot of veterinarians experience imposter syndrome as well, where they, especially right out of vet school, they have a lot of pressure on themselves where they all of a sudden are thrust into this leadership position, or rather like, self-imposed leadership position.
Yes.
And then they feel all this pressure to know everything all the time.
Yeah.
Especially in front of clients.
Yep. Definitely. So
it not only puts a ton of pressure on them, but then they also feel like an island.
Yep. And then it's even harder to ask for help. It's even harder to share your truth underneath, which is actually what you need in order to do real things that are going to make effective change. It might be a very good quality of the modern leader to be able to say, I do want a break today. And by the way, everybody, this is what taking a break looks like. This is what a mental health day looks like for me. You know, in this position, you are all welcome and encouraged, in fact, to do the same thing. So it might be that the real bravery from the real leaders that we're still going to thrust into these positions because of some level of necessity is to turn around and say, this is how I take care of myself. Please make sure that you are too.
Yeah.
And then whip out the little silicone thing on your finger and start brushing your teeth. liver.
Exactly.
All righty. Thank you very much for sharing that. That's a real, incisive insight into a world that is interesting. So it's what Gayborhood's all about. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So we've got folk band, youth pastor, aquarium aquascaping. You did music direction for churches. We don't have to cover all these in a bit by bit thing, but maybe just pick one. What's a formative thing that goes to you today that forms your sense of self-identity and is part of Jesse? What's one of these that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I mean, the folk band and me being a musician, being a music major, like that's been a huge part of my identity for a long time. You know, as many other gays out there back in high school, I was in choir, I was in theater, you know, that kind of
theater gays
person. Yep. Yeah.
Glee team.
And so, yeah, when I, being in my folk band, I was living out my dream. You know, we made a couple albums, we went on tour a few times. I was doing it with my best friend. We were a folk duo. And she was also a music major. That's where I met her back in college. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I was just kind of living out my dream, like with the music videos and all that stuff. Mm. And so, it was really formative and helped me a lot, to be honest, in my confidence and digging down deep into who I really was. Mm. And while I was in the band is actually when I came out.
Yep.
You know, I grew up in a Christian home, went to a Christian university, like I was Christian through and through. And so it took me a long time to come out. Mm. And through the songwriting, through the experiences that I had with the band, I really did get to a place where I could actually accept myself and also understand that my faith and my sexuality can coexist and actually thrive with each other.
Mm. Nice. I can only imagine that when you are in a band and, as you said, digging deeper into yourself, because the process of that artistic creation is to reach for something real inside of yourself and express it through music, right? So that people will cotton on to something powerful and authentic and important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost like people could go through kind of music therapy or music training, music personal growth training, to say, we might all be terrible at music for now, but let us see if we can dig for something that expresses our truth in, well, I was about to say safe space. I mean, yeah, safe space. You don't have to publicize your creation. I guess it could be writing or music or anything, but the actual action of choosing to dig deep into yourself to find something to then get creative with it and express it, that sounds like something everyone should do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, that's art in general.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of art in general. Mm. So mine just happens to be music and songwriting, but... You know, I've heard that from tons of different artists and even people who, you know, by day they're accountants, but at night they watercolor paint and then they realize, oh, this, I'm learning a lot about myself through watercolor painting and, you know, painting inside of these stencils that I bought, you know, from Michaels for $4. Do they have Michaels in Australia?
No. Like, is Michaels, that a chain of,
yeah, like craft stores?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think we have a Michaels here. But there's other ones. I think it's called like Arts and Crafts. I've got a reveal. I'm sitting here scratching my head going like, damn, where was my artistic outlet? I think it happens these days literally through coaching and the discussion of profoundly important topics, the kind of books that I read.
Totally.
And I think I'd be a writer. I also made a whole book. How am I not an artistic person?
Yeah, I was like, you wrote a book too.
Yeah, I think writing, if anything, would be my number one. But digging deep into yourself, I guess before it was writing, it was sharing with people, you know, with friends or family or partners or dates, like really trying to get across in words, things, concepts, ideas, feelings, experiences. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I completely echo that. You know, me, I've always been a very creative person. I've tried so many different types of like creative outlets and styles and I've definitely found that in coaching, you know, as I am trying to create the questions to guide my client through the process, I have to formulate and think through and create a pathway basically for my client to go down that shows them, you know, what I want to kind of show them or what they need to see, what they need to be shown, you know?
Yes. I'm also thinking about, oh God, I'm just jamming about me now, but I'm gently wading into the waters of things like guided meditations. I'm very skeptical of crystals and dragons. I'm not, you know, a dark moon rising Sagittarius or anything. Mm-hmm. Love and respect to those people and how they are having an artistic expression and fun, and everyone's having their own journey. Perhaps they're having a very different reality to me. But anyway, for me, yeah, in my coaching too, when I do a lot of the mindfulness stuff, when it's not just digging appropriately with the client to get the truth out of them so that they raise their self-awareness, it's, as you say, guiding them to something like, does peace and stillness deliver anything to you? Do you find direction or insight or have any strong feelings around here? Or what if you do this? And yeah, that's a creative process for sure. And it's fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's funny how you think about how we grew up in school and how everyone sit up straight, fold your arms, follow the rules. Like this kind of quote unquote airy fairy stuff that me and you have come to understand in our adult lives is so very, very, very important. Isn't done a lot in our traditional schooling system. That's a shame because it could be.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I've thought about that too, about how, particularly, you know, because I'm a relationship coach, this is my mentality nowadays, but, with relationship coaching, a lot of the stuff that I teach in my coaching is fairly basic stuff and could be taught in schools.
Yep.
But it's just not. And this is all stuff that's like proven from the psychological community and talked about frequently within the psychological community, you know, like needs and boundaries and, you know, deep like subconscious wounds and stuff like that. Like those types of things could be talked about at, you know, maybe not the middle school level, but maybe the high school level. Like maybe they're smart enough.
I don't think it's about being smart, right?
I guess so.
I think people are afraid to be real with children because there's this whole, oh, children are the most sacred holy grail and like any kind of violation of a child is the most ultimate crime in the universe. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but that doesn't mean that we can't have real talk with children and interface with them at an appropriate level, on their level, about where they're at, what they're going through, and what it means to be human.
True. Totally, totally. At least with understanding like basic needs, what your emotions are telling you, like things like that, for sure. Earlier the better, because then it just creates that foundation where they can express themselves, feel like they can bring themselves into all types of relationships, not just romantic. And they feel comfortable doing so and advocating for themselves later on.
Yeah. You just create more well-rounded, hopefully self-loving, effective people.
Exactly. Yeah.
One day we'll make the curriculum. Should we put that on our to-do list?
Yeah. Perfect. Yep. Sounds good.
All right. Hey, this has been the most wonderful, longest introduction I think I've ever done on Gaberhood. I'm going to quickly go through some of the points. I think we've actually covered half of everything that leads up to diving into your special topic. So we're going to be talking today about the Enneagram. It's something I have a basic understanding of and some exposure to, but we'll get heaps more on that. And then attachment styles is the other half of both your coaching, but today's special topic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's just get to that. I have a list. Okay. I got to do it.
All right.
Ever did you realize you were quote unquote different? When did you feel and truly know that, I am different? Any formative experiences?
You know, I felt different when I was a little kid in elementary school. I wanted to fit in. I didn't want to be different, but I just, and so I guess a part of me didn't want to accept it and kept trying to fit in.
Yep.
But reflecting back, yeah, I mean, that's when I kind of realized like, okay, I'm different, but still like, accept me. I'm still cool. Yeah. You know,
was it a sense of your own, I'm male, but I'm sensitive? Or was it like, I like boys? Or was it, I'm nerdy and geeky or expressive or musical? Or what do you remember?
All of the above.
Oh,
literally all of the above. Yeah. You know, there was a friend that I had a crush on back in elementary school. But you know, I couldn't understand
didn't realize it what that was. Then. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and then my artistic side, like, you know, when there was a time when I was, well, I guess I'm still very into baking as well and making cakes and stuff. That's another one of my many hobbies.
You don't stop.
I really don't. No, I don't. But, you know, and so even back then I was kind of interested in baking. And it maybe it was because I was a chubby kid, but, cool. Yeah. And so one of my birthdays, my mom got me an Easy Bake oven, like in front of my guy friends.
And this is a very like well-known girl's toy, right?
Totally. Yeah.
An American like, culture thing. It's on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, like I got like a little teased from it, but it was my friends and they kind of understood. And, you know, I liked the Spice Girls and I wanted to like, perform a Spice Girls song at the talent show. And I even, my final day of fourth grade, my first concert I went to was Spice Girls, back when I was in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And, I, this might be so cringy to say, but I love the cringe. So I'm embracing it.
Let's do it.
I really loved the aesthetic in Hard Rock cafes back then.
All right.
Where it's like, you know, a poster of a famous person and then something physical memorabilia from them that they actually wore. Mm. So because I love the Spice Girls so much, I decided I wanted to turn my room into a Spice Girls themed Hard Rock cafe kind of style. So took down all my posters, got a poster of each Spice Girl, and then made my mom go to a shoe store and buy shoes that would be like what each Spice Girl would wear and like hang them up next to each poster. And my mom, she's like, okay, Jess, let's do it. And she was like, but we're getting them in my size. So when you're done with this phase, I get to keep all the shows.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. There was a kickback for mom. You didn't just enslave her to your little gay boy fantasy, but she got something out of it too.
Exactly.
And she was willing to do it. That's nice. It's nice. Yeah, that stuff will get complicated, and I'm sure we could talk about it for days, actually. But I'm glad that at least your mom was connecting with you on that level, not just shutting it down, not just like slapping it in the face, being like, no.
Totally. I mean, I had a Little Mermaid doll for years and still do, actually. I still have her, but played with her for years. Mm. And my mom embraced that too. Nice. Like all of these little, you know, kind of stereotypical gay things as a child.
Yep.
My mom just like, yeah, Jess, go for it. Do that. Yeah, nice. Cool. Sounds good.
Do you think just quickly, because you've got a Christian background, is your church a... How out of 10 anti-gay is like the Christian following that you belong to or like the local church or the group generally? Are they quite anti-gay or is it a bit like under the radar? We just don't talk about it a lot or.
Yeah. So there's especially probably I'd say in the last 10 years or so, there's been a pretty big movement towards, LGBT affirming churches.
Yep.
Yeah, I was a part of a church in San Diego for a couple years that was affirming. The pastor, I have found the church because the pastor actually wrote a book about how the verses in the Bible that talk about homosexuality being a sin are actually not what people think they are.
Right.
Sorry,
the childhood church that was informing, say, your mum and dad's view of the world and Christianity and how little boys should be, do you think your mum was going against the grain or was it a bit more like, no, we're all God's children, everyone's made perfectly and he's probably not gay or like gays don't exist, so this is fine, like Easy Bake Oven? Was it like cognitive dissonance or was it kind of affirming love and we'll deal with this later, or I will love my son and the church had better catch up, or what do you think?
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I mean, the church that I grew up in, and I hopped around to a few different denominations throughout my childhood. Mm-hmm. But each of those denominations, they weren't and still aren't affirming for LGBT.
Damn.
And so I think my mom, yeah. Oh yeah. I think back then my mom was just like, church was part of her life, but it wasn't like a huge part. Mm. And she wasn't super conservative either. Mm. And so for me, playing with a doll, she was just like, okay, whatever, Jess, like you do you. Mm. And if I had brought my Little Mermaid doll to church with me, I think she would have been like, yeah, maybe let's leave that at home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of thing. But mostly for your protection rather than a conforming to what other people required, but maybe a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
exactly. That's beautiful. Your mom was there for you. That's fucking cool. How was dad?
Yeah, right?
Was dad on the same wavelength or?
My dad's pretty conservative. So I think as far as like all of that kind of stuff, my dad just kind of let my mom parent.
Right. Yep.
And you know, he was quarterback back in high school, always super into football, you know.
Yep.
He has been a salesman like up until he retired. He was a salesman. So very like straight white male, you know.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of the artistic, creative kind of dare to say like more feminine sides of me.
Sensitive, emotional.
Exactly. He didn't really understand. And so he knew that like men could be that way. He just didn't relate to it. And so I think he just allowed my mom to kind of take the lead there.
All right, cool. Let's call it positive neutral.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't not want to like you. He didn't not want to connect. It just was difficult because you were quite different people.
Exactly. Nice. Yeah.
How are things today? Are you good with dad?
Yeah.
Nice.
My parents, they're still together and I talk to them every week, visit them, you know, every few months, or they come visit me. Great. Yeah. We have a great relationship.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like to some extent you were a little gay boy, air quotes. Are you a big gay boy today?
Very much so.
Hooray. Yeah.
Hooray.
Is it the same stuff or has it evolved?
I mean, I still have
an same energy
towards the Spice Girls, but
yeah.
Oh yeah, totally same energy. Like, cool. Still very creative, still very out there, weird, different, 100%.
Nice. My entire life have been impressed by people who were able to let that happen, if you know what I mean. Part of my personal journey is like shutting myself down a bit more, or you know, I don't really have that Spice Girls thing. Like I see it in a lot of gay dudes, but I'm like, oh, I don't have that gene, or I don't understand that. I was following, my own stuff. But when people, you know, I was a bully in kind of primary school and high school. We only have the two here in Australia, because I would look at people like you, and I would go, that guy's like letting his truth happen. I hate that about him because it reminds me that I don't and I can't. And so I would have picked on someone like you for sure.
Oh, totally. Sorry. I mean, there's, I agree. I mean, if, I don't agree clearly, but I could see that, you know,
get it.
I get it. Like, especially back in, when I was younger, you know, I got picked on a ton and it was for that very reason. Like people just didn't really get me, didn't understand me. I also was a bit of a chubby kid. And so it was kind of fun for the other kids to like come and like push me. And then I would try to chase them and I couldn't catch up.
I was also a chubby kid. I'm still a chubby big boy today as well.
So. Yeah. Chubby kids unite.
Yes. Cool.
But, a lot of that kind of social pressure hit me into high school. That's when I still was like into the nerdy stuff. I was into anime and stuff like that and had my group of friends that was like that.
Yep.
But it was contrasting with my church life, which was very different. And it was contrasting with, you know, especially in theater, there were some theater kids, but most of them honestly were like the jocks, the preps that just wanted the easy A. And so I would, you know, try to relate with them and like go and be with them. And so it was like all of these different sides of me being torn apart and not really knowing where I should go and just kind of floating around.
Yep.
So it I kind of lost my identity for a minute there and got depressed because of it and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that. I often like to quote that hurt people hurt people. And I think I provided an example of that just recently. And healed people heal people. It's because that you and I have gone through these tumultuous internal struggles and more or less mostly come out the other side that we're able to have such an intimate understanding of what that is like to go through and therefore what it can be like and could be like for other people. So it actually becomes our superpower, you know?
Totally.
The church 100%. was the adversity and the struggle that gave you the powers that you wield today because you've been there and you've done it.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I'm glad you brought that up because there's been multiple times, even since coming out, where, you know, certain people who I used to know come to me and they're like, you know, I'm so happy that you came out and you showed this bravery because I actually experience, you know, similar feelings. And I've been nervous to come out. I've been nervous to talk to my parents or go to my church. And I'm afraid of all these things that'll happen. And so I get to be there for them as like a guide almost.
Yep. It's a beautiful thing. I suspect that me and you would be very much on board with creating something that explained how love / God / spirituality can absolutely totally exist for anyone, especially including us sensitive emotional gays, not all gays, but # not all gays, without necessarily subscribing to any form of religion or agreement or signing up to any leader or committing any pacts to anyone. And I feel like it's been ripped out of us, which is a real shame because these things are very important. There's a wedge between deep spiritual connection and religiosity for young queers. And the journey to actually bring that together again, very, very, very difficult. And I imagine there's just, you know, I have been through this too. Most of us are still angry and bitter and resentful towards that entire situation. But the real shame for me, having done more coaching work, is that discovering in our center, or like just having these little kind of personal spiritual explorations of, you know, where does me reside? What does that feel like? How does my love manifest in the world? What's animating that? Why do people do anything that they do? What are we living for? These big existential questions. I find an answer in like love / God, little g God. But I feel robbed of that from an early age because the whole like you're gay, you don't belong thing just spoiled the whole bloody thing. But imagine if, you know, people like me and you could go and others. I know there are other people out there, but I don't know if it's a book or a something or a musical. Maybe it's a musical that grabs this wedge that has been stabbed into us and makes moves to heal it. I think I would love to be involved in something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, same. I think that there's... reflecting back on my childhood and whatnot, there is definitely some anger there, as I'm sure most gay Christians experience, because it's like I feel lied to, I feel deceived for so long. And I could have been experiencing my full self with my faith for such a long time, and you know, most of us, you know, gay Christians experience this inner turmoil, because always having to feel like they had to choose their sexuality or their faith.
Yep. And that's the lie.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I've gotten to a bit of a more accepting place with that anger though, where I'm all like that anger has almost become a little bit of a friend.
Yeah.
And at the same time, because of that, it brings some peace. Because I'm able to then go, I now see the light and I can guide others with that as well.
Yep. So that becomes your technical expertise, but then you are left with this residual, deep, personal, emotional reserve of an anger that someone, Alan Downs, would call the velvet rage, perhaps. But Oprah and people like her will talk about using your anger and the fire that burns there as the fuel that fires your purpose, that gets your engine going to live the life the way you truly want to. So, yeah, befriending totally. It, turning yeah. it.
I love that you said that quote, by the way, too, because and you bring that up because I feel like and this kind of relates to the Enneagram, which we'll talk about in a second. But there's part of the Enneagram is each personality type. There's a core emotion that they experience. One of three, either shame, fear, or anger. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people look at those and go, oh, but why does it have to be so negative? And like what you just touched on just now, those aren't necessarily negative emotions. No. They can be turned into something extremely positive and be driving forces towards change and towards good.
100%. And there's no, why correlate the word negative with the word bad? It's like getting a cut, right? Mm. It hurts, but that's not bad. It's good. It tells you stop getting your arm cut off, like stop exactly. getting electrocuted, stop getting yeah. burnt. The when we say negative, there's this language implication that it's bad, or the social kind of subconscious understanding that negative equals bad. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. How could you ever understand how joyous triumph is if you've never experienced difficulty, struggle, strain, or challenge? Everything exactly. would just be easy and it would be crap. So without negative, we're robbed of the positive. All of this is absolutely part of a complete life. To turn mm-hmm. away from our negative feelings is to just deny life and then end up denying ourselves and to deny truth. And it doesn't ever lead anywhere good.
Exactly. Requires the yin and the yang.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, I am satisfied with my list ticking. We have addressed almost everything okay. we always address. Let's dive into cool. the Enneagram.
Okay.
What's the basic, what's the Enneagram?
Yeah. So the Enneagram, to sum it up really, really high level, it's a personality typing system that talks about people's core motivations. And the Enneagram is broken up into 9 different personality types. Within each type is different subdivisions and breaks it up even further than just the 9. But the core of it is the 9 types.
Yep. And they correspond to numbers, right?
They do, yeah. So, you know, if you are a certain type personality, like for instance, I am an Enneagram 4. Mm-hmm. So I would say I am a 4, like the number. But what makes the Enneagram different from really any other personality typing system, one is the core motivations as opposed to speaking to the behaviors. But also the Enneagram, it's connected within each other. Meaning me as a 4, I am connected to other personality types in certain ways. And kind of those connections to those other types basically flavor who I am as Jesse. Mm. Who flavor me as the 4, but then also flavor me even further of I am Jesse and makes up my personality. Mm. And so it's hard to describe because it is so complex,
yes.
but at the same time, like it is so, it's so informative and revealing.
Right. My understanding is that it is based on hundreds, if not thousands of years of, let's call it coaching. But what I mean by that is like a more, emotional, spiritual, personal, humanistic, exploration of what it means to be and the experiences that we have to define a range of human experiences that different people have. So ultimately, it is a tool that goes very deep that is enabling self-reflection, self-understanding, and understanding of others and our differences. So it's a tool totally. To understand humanity and yourself.
Exactly.
Based yeah. on hundreds of years of actual like people trying in a dedicated way, very hard to be very specific and effective. And yeah. So I'm always dancing. I think we are always dancing on this line between pure science, evidence-based everything, and then there's things that are hard to evidence, like how much love do you feel today? You could give a number, but like, I don't know, is that an accurate measure? So things become unmeasurable and therefore gray in a scientific sense pretty quickly. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of important stuff here that is very, I've started using the word experiential. Like, if you feel it happen for you, perhaps that is evidence.
Yeah.
Do you feel acceptance for your sexuality? Like, people can have an answer for that, but it's very hard to measure. It doesn't mean it's not real. Right. It is real, but it's more gray. So we have to dance into the grayness to explore these things.
Yeah. I think anything with your psyche and with your personality, what makes you, you, that's so hard to measure and to formulate exactly, you know?
I understand that you can download short courses for the Enneagram, or you can work with an Enneagram qualified coach or professional. What's your interaction in a professional sense, like with the Enneagram and clients?
Yeah. So I'm a certified Enneagram coach, my interaction with it, there's tons of books out there. There's tons of coaches. The one that I've experienced that have been, kind of the most in depth, is where I got my certification through. They tend to push the coaches more rather than writing their own books and whatnot. But I think the reason for that is because they realize that the Enneagram happens between people. It doesn't necessarily happen in a book. And so in conversations with people, and what makes the Enneagram a bit different as well is those like tests online and whatnot, they actually, because it talks about core motivations, most of those tests actually are just a guesstimate based off your answers. They're not exact. The only really exact way to pinpoint what type you are is to self-identify, for you to look into the Enneagram yourself, look into the 9 different types and the nuances within each type, and to go, ah, that's me. That's who I am.
Mm-hmm. And then you would extrapolate knowledge from the understanding and study of the Enneagram that might suggest these things might be of great interest to you. These things might be difficult for you. These things might be complementary for you in human interaction, living your personal life, how to take good care of yourself and become your best self.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Cause like I said, it is all about core motivations. And so there's things that stem out of that, like different fears you experience, different emotions you experience, the different behaviors that you might show. But you know, one Enneagram 4 that is my exact same type down to the nuances might look very different than another Enneagram 4. And it's because even though that's your core motivation, so you can talk about that, your life experiences still play a part.
Yeah. Like one could be the leader of a death metal band and the other one does sock puppetry for children, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
And so how I incorporate that into my coaching is just talking about that, like getting into my client's mindset and understanding what their life was like, kind of. You know, I don't go too far into their past because I'm not a licensed therapist, but you know, helping them understand how they've gotten to the point where they are and how to move forward, with understanding that their core motivations influence all these other types of areas in their life. And so if they're able to just remember and tap into those core motivations a lot more, they're going to experience a lot more peace, balance, happiness. And what's beautiful about the Enneagram too is there's growth within it. It's not you are your type your entire life. Like my entire life, from when I was born to when I die, I will always be an Enneagram 4. But the kind of Buddhist-esque goal with it, like enlightenment kind of goal with it, is to actually become balanced between all the 9 types.
Right, to move to the center of the Enneagram.
Exactly. And to learn the lessons that each each Enneagram type uses for their core motivations. Because at the center, at the very, very deep down center of each core motivation for each type is a pursuit of love. It's how they're trying to receive and to give love.
Yep. Yeah, I've been saying for a while that there was, I don't know exactly when it was, but I have had a realization that I do everything that I do because of love.
Yeah.
Everything.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Literally everything. I work to produce, I explore, I create, I share, I connect, I sing, I dance, I play. All of these are for the achievement or experience of love.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're a creative type. You just mentioned you sing and you dance.
I think I got seven.
I don't have any creative album.
But I don't sing and dance. But I mean, when I am singing and dancing, or when I'm wanting that, or when I'm experiencing intrinsic motivation towards anything at all, if you look into it deeply enough, it comes, it's a lame thing to say in a single sentence, but it comes from love. It's because of love. If I was raising plants, it would be something to do with maybe the experience of plants, or eating food, or sharing food, or food security, because love. Like, there's always a because love at the end of basically everything that I do. And that's very nice. And to realize that that's also happening for other people, you know, everyone's has to speak their own truth and have their own realization. So if you don't do things because of love, like, I still got time and space for you. I'm not going to say you're wrong, but it helps me feel connected and belonging on a really, really, really deep foundational level with literally everybody of every religion, of every culture, of every time period. That's really freaking nice.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. That was cool. Anything else on the Enneagram before we talk about attachment styles? Any final points?
So I guess a good transition to attachment styles from Enneagram is the reason why I use both the Enneagram and attachment theory within my coaching for relationships is because with the Enneagram, it helps us understand ourselves at such a deep level. So it helps us bring a understanding and kind of a grace, a forgiveness for yourself. Cause you see, oh, this is just part of who I am. This isn't something that I've been, that I should be ashamed of. Then you kind of understand others too, and you understand, oh, this is just part of who you are. So that plays into your relationships with others, you know, any relationship, coworkers, friends, family, romantic, whatever. Because then you go, oh, you are that type of Enneagram number. So that means your core motivations are X, Y, Z. So that's why you're doing it this way. You know, for instance, like my partner, he is an Enneagram 8, very different than an Enneagram 4. Very, very different. By me understanding that he's an Enneagram 8, it helps us with so many different conflicts that might arise and turn into a really huge thing. It helps us understand each other and get to a place where we can kind of speak each other's language. And we also kind of know what each other needs in certain situations too.
Nice. That's beautiful.
Yeah,
I do encourage everyone to learn at very least the basics of the integrative Enneagram and have a look into what it's suggesting. It's fun. You can get short books on it, long books on it. I've not dived super deep in it, but I really enjoyed it. And thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Attachment styles. Let's get on to this. I think I've got to out myself straight away, as I have vented frustration when someone comes up to me and they're like, well, you see, Ed, I'm an anxious, avoidant attacher. And I'm like, okay, but how is this helping us explore anything about you and your truth? Now, was I underinformed, or is approaching it that way a bit blunt and silly? Because to me, that person was like, here's this concept that defines who I am. And I was like, but you're not a concept?
I agree. I mean, so something that differs from attachment theory from the Enneagram, for instance, is your attachment styles can actually change. And so for somebody to say, oh, I'm an anxious, avoidant attachment style, or in other words, the The other names for that too, by the way, are fearful avoidant or disorganized attachment style. Mm-hmm. I'm just this way. It's very like, this is just who I am. I'm never going to change right. writing it off.
And a bit of like this victimhood mentality, like this.
Totally.
Yeah. I don't have responsibility for me. This is what I'm stuck with. And I'm therefore something.
Exactly. Well, and a quick side note about that too, with the Enneagram, even though you are your number your entire life, there are still things about you that can be unhealthy or healthy, different
yes.
tendencies.
Yes.
And so you always should have that mentality of bettering yourself, of personal development, self-improvement. And you should never have that standpoint where, oh, this is just who I am. I'm never going to, you know, get better or shift things or change things, you know, nice. Especially if there's something that creates discord in your relationships or with yourself.
I thank you for saying it that way. That really, you know, works for me and it makes sense. And I hope that anyone who heard that out there who has picked up the Attachment Styles book that I did, I didn't like it and I stopped after 20 minutes. But I'm looking forward to you taking me through it more deeply. Quite possibly much more personally and much more humanly than I've been exposed to it so far. So I hope that listeners get the same thing. What do you want us to know about attachment styles and understandings and how you use it in your personal life, but also your professional life?
Yeah, for sure. So attachment theory, I'll just give a high level overview real quick.
That's all we got time for.
Attachment theory is basically how you relate within relationships. It's your love style. That can be within, you know, family, friends, romantic relationships, even coworkers. But it tends to show up the strongest, and the most frequent and honestly the most insecure within romantic relationships.
Right.
And so, that's the best opportunity for you to heal your attachment style as well and move towards a what's called a secure attachment style is within your romantic relationships. So there are four different attachment styles. There's one secure, which I mentioned, and then three insecure. The three insecure are anxious, preoccupied, on the other side of the spectrum, dismissive, avoidant, and then in the middle, the one we mentioned before, fearful, avoidant, or also called disorganized or also called anxious avoidant. So basically to really summarize it, the anxious preoccupied, they trust others, but they don't trust themselves deep down. The dismissive avoidant, they trust themselves, but they don't trust others. And then the fearful avoidant in the middle, they have both the anxious side and the dismissive side within them. And so they kind of slingshot moment to moment between the two. So one moment they'll be more on the anxious side and then they'll slingshot suddenly to the dismissive side. So because the AP, the anxious preoccupied, they trust others, but they don't necessarily trust themselves. They usually really enjoy being in romantic relationships and kind of crave it and seek after it. They tend to be the ones who are the serial monogamists.
Clingers,
you know, the clingers, the people pleasers. They are actually very genuinely like sweet people, but the problem is they are still insecure about themselves. And so what happens in a relationship is they don't bring themselves into the relationship. They make the relationship all about their partner. And that's where that preoccupied word comes from, is they become very preoccupied with their partner and thinking about their partner in particular. So even when they're at work, they're constantly thinking about their partner, how to make their partner happy, when's the next date, all of those kinds of things.
Does the word nice guy come to you as well for this type?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, because they trust others, they can connect with people so deeply. But
there's a dark underside.
Right. Like because they're not bringing themselves into the relationship, there actually is a sense of being closed off.
Yeah.
Of lacking that intimacy.
When I connect with someone who's experiencing something very much like this, I ask them, is one of your values that kind of everyone on earth is equal in some sense? Everyone deserves a chance. Everyone is worthy enough. Everyone is human. And just by being human and being alive, that you're granted a certain set of, you know, rights and fundamental things that we deserve and I would like other people to have: love, respect, connection, you know, autonomy, et cetera, et cetera. And they say yes. Mm-hmm. And so then I go, okay, cool. You know, is that how you treat people in your life? And they're like, I like to think so. And I go, well, do you always treat yourself that way? Do you actually mm-hmm. confer that same principled stand to yourself? And they're like, oh, I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. there's a human being on this planet that you're not treating with respect and love and giving them airtime to speak their truth, to hold their, you know, to have their pains, to express their desires, to ask for what they want. There's someone that you're leaving in the dirt, and it's actually you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're gonna have integrity and stand by your belief that I agree with, everyone deserves, you know, human rights and has a base level of respect and love and space and all of that, you must give it to yourself or you're becoming a self-defeating liar and, right. you know, making a mockery of your own position. So that yeah. is every nice guy's challenge, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, and what's funny is most anxious preoccupieds, they will agree with that. And yeah. they'll go, yes, I mean, I do give myself love and I do practice these things. I'm in therapy. I'm doing these things, you know,
grateful
whatever.
Every day.
Yeah, exactly. But the issue there is they have deep-seated, more on the subconscious level, these core wounds, these core beliefs about themselves that they haven't worked through. Mm. You know, this fear of abandonment, this belief that they're not good enough, you know, things like that, where they need to actually work through those things.
Yes.
Because then they'll be comfortable alone.
Yeah.
And then being in a partnership or not being in a partnership, they'll want a partner, but they won't feel like I need my partner. I need to be in a relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm. Jesse, you are very clearly both learned and wise in the ways of relationships and conducting your personal emotional life. And thank you for being a helper and having both the knowledge and the capacity and putting in the time and effort to help people. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
So, if it's all right with you, I'd like to move on to my topic a little bit, which is always gay shame.
Yay!
Hooray! I know it can be uncomfortable and difficult, but I think it's also extremely natural and extremely important to our personal growth, self-esteem, confidence, and life satisfaction. And I do this, of course, on this podcast called Gayborhood, because the vast majority of listeners are going to be gay men and queer people. And I think it stands not just for our, me and you, our personal growth, self-esteem, confidence to share these things, but it will help everybody listening. Are you ready?
Yeah, awesome. Let's do it.
Do you harbor shame today? To what extent? Kind of tell, what is shame? How does it look like in your life today?
Yeah. Me and shame, we are best friends. We have been best friends for a long time. Mm. But the thing about it is, like what I was mentioning before, not to bring it back to the Enneagram, but that's just where my mind always goes.
Sure.
Me being a four, I mentioned the three core emotions, shame, anger, and fear. Me being a four, my core emotion is shame. Mm-hmm. And so I've experienced a lot in my life. But how we were talking about it before, I realize where my shame has taken me and like all the positive, good places, how it's been a driving, motivating force.
Yes.
And so do I experience shame today? Of course, but the way that I view that shame isn't negatively, it's in the positive. I experience this shame in a way that allows me to move beyond that negative side and grow from it. Have you ever seen the movie Inside Out?
Yes.
I just watched that the other day, and I've been thinking about this since then. You know, like throughout the whole movie, you know, the character Joy is treating the character Sadness as like this negative thing just to push aside the entire movie. But then she realizes at the end, you know, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but it's been like 10 years, so get over it.
Yep.
You know, she realizes at the end that Sadness is needed and necessary and is actually beautiful.
Yeah.
And, that's... It's what?
It's integral. It's integral to us. Have you ever been to a funeral and cried your eyes out and it was, you would not trade that experience for anything?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's how I view my shame.
Nice. Sounds super healthy. Love it.
I try.
Well, actually, I've got this question here that is, how was your relationship to shame in the past? But I actually feel... that would take quite a lot of time, but more importantly, we addressed a lot of it already. Is there is the short answer, yeah, not the same? Like, no, it was not like this before. I buried it, crushed it.
Oh, yeah. Especially, like I mentioned before, growing up in the church, shame was my jam.
Yeah.
It was it. And sinking deep into the dark, depressing depths of shame often.
Oof.
Like I said, experiencing those depths allows me to almost like a seed. Like I got pushed down so far into the depths to then grow out of it and grow into something beautiful and thriving.
Yeah. Your boot camp, you know, your mountain range that you had to cross in order to become a man, but like to become the powerful man that you are today required this journey.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Nice. So it's hard to be angry about, you know, the gay shame and stuff. Once you've healed your shit, it makes us powerful. I imagine some people will never... come as far as other people who have had greater adversity, more challenges, and greater difficulty in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you rate your life out of 10 these days?
I would put it at a solid maybe 8.
Oh, yeah?
8. Yeah, 8, 8.5.
What's missing?
So it's very surface level. I realize that, but... I've been in California since 2008. I'm just kind of ready for a change. And so my brother and his family, they live up near Seattle in Washington. And that kind of environment where it's foresty and it's green and it's lush and it's rainy and, you know, misty and all those things, all of that would probably push it to a 10.
All right. So you're not currently in the environment that feels like you'd like to be in.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, pretty much.
Cool.
But so as far as like mentally and emotionally, all that stuff, yeah, probably like an 8.
Oh, nice. Very good. So is it an 8 that like you can see easily becoming a 10 just by making a few little adjustments?
Totally, yeah. In fact, like as I've moved, over the last little while into coaching, that has increased significantly. And so that alone was a huge change for me to get to a point where I'm like, okay, I am living the life that I want to live now. So now I just want to be in the place where I want to live my life.
Nice. Yeah. For me too, making a shift to make my productive time align exactly with what I really cared about was a huge, huge, huge change. Not everything about working from home alone in this small office that is expensive in the middle of Melbourne is perfect. Not at all.
Yeah. No.
But it's like we were talking about before with the positive, negative, yin yang. I want everyone to know out there, we both are coaches, right? And we've done a lot of work. We continue to do work. We love doing work with people. Our feelings, as in positive, negative, happy, sad, are probably more or less exactly neutral when you add them all up. I have grumpy days. Today was definitely one of them. I haven't been feeling awesome until recently. But, you know, talking to people always makes me come alive. Yeah. Feelings always average out to neutral, and that's never going to change for our entire life. But the deeper sense of satisfaction and purpose and belonging and wellness that comes from a deeper place within, beyond mere feelings, that can change. And that I want everyone to get 10 out of 10 in that realm. Our feelings will never, it's not like you can just take MDMA for the rest of your life because you're good at mindfulness or because you do life coaching. No.
Right.
Feelings will always go up and down, but yeah, deep satisfaction, exactly. Purpose, meaning, belonging, connection, these things can all be addressed and improved.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and like everybody else with their jobs too, there are days, everybody else in jobs that they enjoy, there are days when you don't enjoy it too, and you're just dreading it. You just want to laze around all day and avoid it. Mm. You know, that's just part of having a job and being a person and
being a
having different needs contradict each other at times.
Yep. What do you mean we can't just say 9 to 5 is the perfect window within which we only do productive things? Aren't you a robot?
And we're happy and joyous the entire time.
Oh, every smile I make in a corporate environment is totally sincere.
Exactly.
God damn it.
Not fake at all. No.
Nice. Anything else on attachment styles or this area of your work before we jump into the zany question round?
Yeah. So I guess I'll just wrap that part up with saying, with attachment styles, like I said, it can move. And so when you uncover the different tendencies, the different habits that you have, uncover that these are actually deep-seated in the subconscious and start to move past your insecurities, that's when you really experience true security within yourself and are able to come into a relationship both confident in yourself, but then also trusting of the other person and okay with being vulnerable.
Wow, nice. That's kind of a lot, but I love it. Would you say that in that process, the process that you just described, you bring a lot of your subconscious into your conscious because you did the work to explore yourself? There's still going to be a whole invisible world of subconsciousness that kind of bubbles up to influence us, but you can become much more aware of your subconscious world through things
like 100%.
Yes. Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, our subconscious, the area where we fault is when we try to force the language of the conscious to the subconscious. Like,
yes.
So the language of the subconscious is, through imagery and emotion. But the language of the conscious mind is logic and verbal language and things like that. Mm. And so, you know, for instance, like I don't really like the daily affirmations where you just kind of go like, I am strong, I am strong, I am strong, and just say the words over and over and over again.
100%.
Without any meaning, without any like envisioning how you're strong, without remembering times when you felt strong or where you've, you know, looked at yourself and thought you were strong. Mm. Like, it's just not going to work.
Yeah. Your strength isn't in your conscious mental mind. It's more deeply within you, right? So if you don't connect to your strength when you're sitting with or doing a mantra of strength and resilience and power and confidence, you're just deluding yourself with a mental position as opposed to actually doing something really
exactly.
real and powerful that is accessible to people.
Exactly. And if you have that deep-seated, like for instance, the belief, you know, I am weak, for instance, and so you're trying to tell yourself, I am strong, I am strong, strong. Because you have that deep-seated belief of I am weak, by you telling yourself I am strong, you don't, and you're not bringing evidence to it, like with different memories or times or whatever, you're making actually causing yourself, you're making it worse.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because now you're associating the language of being strong with like, oh, I'm lying to myself.
Yeah. And I am clearly a person that must force themselves to be strong, which proves that I'm weak.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I do daily affirmations, but in a different way where it's like, okay, here's the proof to show that I am you know, XYZ that I want to be. And that's really how you speak to your subconscious in a way that it understands and goes, oh, okay. And so then, because, you know, such a huge part, like around 95% of everything that you do, think, and feel comes from your subconscious. That's when your subconscious can get on board with what your conscious mind wants to do.
Yes. I love that we get to use the word coach, which kind of means nothing, but it allows us to take a multidisciplinary approach to people helping. So we can do the psychological, the informational, the rational. We can also do the deeper subconscious, mindful, spiritual stuff. Do both. Go at it from both sides at the same time. Most people wouldn't expect that from a therapist or a counselor or a psychologist or an energy healer or a shaman. Like, but are you on the same page as me? Like, I definitely do both. And I do what feels appropriate in the next step with each client as it goes. Coaching, so wonderful. As you can tell, I'm in love with it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I fully agree with that.
Cool. I was going to say something about shamans, but I'll leave them alone for today. You do use shamans. I love you.
You do use shamans.
All right. You ready for the zany question round?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty. Here we go. Try to answer quickly, but it's okay if you need to pause. Live your truth.
Okay.
Do you like coffee?
Oh, I love coffee. Drink it every day. Multiple cups.
Nice. Do you like anal sex?
Yes. Me being a top, I, you know, I am that way, but, oh yeah, I love it.
Great. Pick one, centaurs or mermaids?
Mermaids. Like I said, Little Mermaid when I was a kid.
Very good. Very good. Sexually?
Like mermaids or centaurs?
No, sorry. So the question is, do you kind of, you know, do you have a sexy thing for mermaids at all? Or does that cross into the world of sexiness?
Gotcha.
Oh, it does?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
It's more like a, they're so pretty. I just like looking at them kind of thing.
All right.
Centaurs, however, I could get on board with that.
Yeah. There we go. What shoes are you wearing?
Nothing. I'm barefoot.
Oh, that is the most common answer. Oh, I'm actually in socks today. Huh, interesting.
Oh, nice.
Pop music or another genre?
Probably pop. All my favorite artists are pop and stuff.
Gotcha.
I've dabbled, you know, like rap and folk and country and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. But yeah, I gravitate back towards pop.
Pop lives in your soul.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Cool. What's your usual Macca's order? Macca's is McDonald's.
Double cheeseburgers are my jam.
Oh yeah.
I do enjoy chicken nuggets, maybe a McFlurry as well.
Oof. Yeah. You're from the bits menu, the bits and pieces.
Oh yeah. No, I'm never any fast food change. I never order like the meal.
The standard. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Cool. What's the single gayest thing about you?
That I have sex with men. I'm just kidding.
Yep. No. Stop. The straightest thing about you?
The straightest thing about me.
Mm-hmm.
Not available.
that I'm not doing it. Or yeah, not available.
Yeah, none.
Gotcha. If I identified, Ed Wilson, identified as an omnisexual uni being, would you accept me?
An omnisexual uni being?
Mm.
I would have to just, I want to explore that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the coach in me. I just want to ask you so many questions and find out how you got there.
Like, this is a great point, Jesse. Yourself? If there are any people who identify as omnisexual uni beings out there, reach out. Gaberhood Podcast on Instagram, edward@gaberhoodpodcast.com, email. Find us. We need to know more about you.
Yeah,
I accept you. Do you accept them in advance? Or
totally.
Not?
100%.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Red apples or green?
Ooh, they both serve their purposes.
Mm. Do you gamble?
Just to eat plainly?
Yep.
Probably red.
Yeah. Yep. It is known. Green is for baking.
Yeah, green is for baking, exactly.
It is known. Do you gamble?
I have in the past. I'm not like a huge gambler, though.
Mm-hmm. Cereal, toast, or none?
Cereal.
Yep.
Very much so.
Who's sexier, Bigfoot or a male Tinkerbell?
Ugh, I hate Tinkerbell, so Bigfoot.
For reasons that I hate Tinkerbell. You're just hanging out with Barefoot. He's like, man, that was good. And you're just like, I love that you are not Tinkerbell so much.
Exactly. You are the opposite of Tinkerbell, so thus I am attracted to you. Yep.
Cool. How many pairs of underwear do you own?
Probably about 8 or 9.
All right.
But they are all black. They are all the same color. Mm. And I get them from Amazon because I'm basic like that.
Oh, look, I think we've discovered now that there's only two types of men, possibly gay men, in the world. There is the ones that own 20 to 30 pairs because they want all the colors and to do all the things. And then there's the guys who have less than 10. And they're almost exclusively one or two colors and basic. And they're like, this is the simplicity I need in my undercarriage.
Yeah, it's true. I don't have to think about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you ever done drugs?
Yeah.
Why? Why did you do these drugs?
Well, it was kind of by accident.
Oh.
I mean, I'll tell the story very quickly. I was seeing this guy who smoked pot and had edibles and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he gave me an edible one time, and he told me it was only pot, but I started severely hallucinating. The high lasted for about 2 days.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like time warped like none other. I described time as a flip book that I was just watching flip by.
Wow.
And literally there's a point where I watched him go to this water fountain, and all of a sudden I hallucinated this giant waterfall at sunset. And I believe that I was part of this people group that lived at the waterfall and protected it because the waterfall was the fountain of youth.
Nice.
All of that happened within a few seconds. And so talking to a few druggy experts of friends of mine, they believe that it was laced with LSD. So,
yeah, but 2 days, fucking hell.
Yeah, that's back when I worked at the vet industry as well.
Wow.
And had to go into work the next day. So I basically just went up to my doctor and confessed, because it's like, how do I work with that?
Right.
And luckily, we had just had a conversation a few days ago about like trying pot and edibles and stuff. So I was like, I'm really high right now, and I did not mean to get to this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you kind of carry me through today? And she's like, yeah, I got you. We're good.
Oh, wow. Hey, that ended really well. I'm sorry that you got spiked and that it was a massive experience that you had very little preparation for, but I'm glad that you were okay. And like, cool story.
Yeah, I laugh about it now, yeah.
Wow, cool. Thanks for sharing. Two more. What happens when we die?
Ooh, I like how you're like, these are quick, fun questions. What happens when we die?
It's a trap.
Well, relates to my faith and where it's at now. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm more of a Christian universalist now, where I kind of believe everybody dies and goes to the same place. Not sure what that is, where that is, or anything like that. But I do believe that there's still a God, and I believe that we go to that God. Mm. You know, I also believe that God is with us now, but like we become more with God, whatever that looks like.
Yeah. Nice. I like it. Do you love me?
Yeah, I love everybody.
Oh,
well,
thank you.
That's maybe not true, but I try to love everybody.
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Thank you very much, Jesse. If people are very interested in your service or you generally and want to be more connected to you, how can they get in touch, or what are your socials, please?
Yeah. So I'm mainly on Instagram. It's just at Jesse Hawkins. You can also check out my website, jessehawkinscoaching.com. But Instagram probably is the easiest way to find me. And I try to post every day or twice a day, so you can actually like see some of the stuff that I'm talking about and DM me, whatever.
So. Nice. It's nice, isn't it? I also am primarily an Instagram platform business operator and coach. And I love that it can hold our images, text, and videos to explore the kind of things that we're talking about today, more usually in more bite-sized chunks. And it is fun. There's little things and it's a cool place. So yeah, thanks, Jesse. Yeah,
it is cool. And I try to have fun with my videos too, have some humor involved and stuff. So. At least it's entertaining if you go visit.
Nice. Yes, everybody follow Jesse Hawkins. You did. I might have been thinking in my brain somewhere else. You said you're at Instagram tag, did you?
Yes, at Jesse Hawkins.
At Jesse Hawkins. JesseHawkins.
Yes, thank you. Awesome. Yeah, a lot of people put an I somewhere in there too.
Oh, okay.
In Jesse, but
no I.
No I.
No I in Jesse.
No, I enjoy seeing you.
Great. Thanks so much, Jesse. Have a wonderful rest of your evening, and thank you for being on the show. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome back. That was Jesse and me. If you have really enjoyed that show, you like his vibe, you like what we talk about, give us a like and a follow on the socials. As he says, it's just a fun place for us to express ourselves. You certainly don't have to... Ooh, excuse me, work with us in coaching to want to enjoy and view and share in some of the content. Right, so please give me some feedback. It's only taken me half an hour to edit and produce, and I'm about to upload the show. I'm just finally, obviously, recording the outro. Is it okay, or is it actually really annoying? I'd love to get, if people are like, nah, Ed, it's cool. Just like, you know, put my nerves at ease that I'm not creating the best product that I possibly could be. Maybe it's perfectionism. Maybe it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I just want to make an amazing show, but I don't want to hurt myself in the process. So if someone could just email me and say, you know what, Ed? I liked it. Or if you didn't like it, still email me and say, Ed, I think you could strongly consider editing it. Let me know. Enough waffle. I hope you love it. Look forward to more episodes. There will be more people. Many of them are coaches. I just love these people. We talk about things that I think really matter and deserve some airtime. And then we speak to regular people as well. If you are a regular person or you are a coach or you want to be on Gaberhood, email me at edward@gaberhoodpodcast.com or reach out at Gaberhood Podcast on Instagram. And again, I'm also at Brown Bear Coaching on Instagram and at A Gay Man Book on Instagram. If you haven't seen it yet, check out www.agaymanbook.com and otherwise continue having an absolutely sensational life. Love you very much. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Take care. Bye. Post-outro intimate moments. I didn't grab any audio from the show, but here's my little voice recording for you, the people that listen all the way to the end.